We're here at the Rialto Theatre, still pretty much at the start of Brighton Fringe 2019. And to coin a cliche, I'm going to try and unmask theatre with at least one half of Unmasked Theatre. I'm here with Luke Oldfield. Luke, tell us about yourself before you even got into this theatre company. What were you doing that led to you creating a theatre company?
So I was at the University of Kent. Both Pip and I went there.
Pip
O'Neill is the co-founder of Unmasked, just my business partner, and we've created the company together.
Just take me back then. Why create one? What was the moment of decision?
This is an awful story. So it was 3 a.m. On a night out at university, which is how most good ideas start, when we talked about how we would stage The Great Gatsby. And the moment that Pip and I knew that maybe we could make something together was talking about the yellow car.
Okay, so you were drunk.
Yeah, yeah. we then ended up producing The Great Gatsby and directing it and writing the adaptation together as part of the Drama Society at Kent. And then afterwards, Pip graduated. I was the year below. And in my last year, we made a production of The Trojan Women, which we then toured. And it was just this beautiful, magical piece of theatre. And we said, let's not get real jobs. Let's keep doing this.
Okay, so part of the unmasking here is that classic. You're young energy. The rules aren't there then. And you do two kind of very ambitious things very quickly.
Yes, really ambitious things that probably would have done with a bit of, in hindsight, but let's ignore that, you know, the how to tour and things like that, but we just went for it. In terms of the Unmasked and where that comes from initially, so I studied theatre and classic history to make myself doubly unemployable, and I love classical literature, but I feel that there is so much sort of isolation, it's very isolating, it's very set in its time, and there is a real set of preconceptions around most texts. So if you take your sort of first initial thoughts, if I talk about Greek tragedy, there's going to be these preconceptions, and that's where Unmasked came, is to literally unmask that and to bring the modern relevance to it, which is what we've been doing now for 4 years.
So why Unmasked, I'm interested in?
Again, the Greek, the Greek tradition of everything being masked in drama.
Did that go a bit deeper? Was there something in you guys that wanted to sort of rip away a facade of something?
I think it was the acknowledgement that when we dealt with text and when we dealt with these great heavy tomes and these dusty tomes that we were looking at, that there's things in them that is so relevant, and there's things in them that just aren't. And sadly, so many people are so enthralled with what isn't relevant, or so sort of. It's the first thing that people think about when we talk about some of the texts that we look to do. They say, last year we did Antony and Cleopatra, and people say that's the one with the snake. And you think, yeah, there's a snake in it. But there is so much beneath that. And for us, it was about ripping into the kind of core of what is underneath those texts. And also with style as well. Greek tragedy is very... I love Euripides, but it's court speech after court speech, which is so unreadable. And it's so difficult to kind of focus on in a modern, vibrant theatre, especially in a fringe theatre scene. So for us, it was about saying, there are magnificent bits of writing, there are beautiful moments on stage, beautiful, tense, dramatic moments created. And we want to do that in a 21st century way.
And so, that's interesting, because so many people talk about being faithful to the original, but the world changes. We're in a changing time. And culture changes and expectations change, you know. And so staying true to the original in a changing context ends up being fake, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think the moment you have any, and especially we're dealing with a lot of texts in translations, the moment you translate a text, you automatically put a bias on it. And I think that if we can put up with these texts being translated and say, oh, it's faithful, but it's already not. So already we're dealing with stuff that's had a spin. Why can't we put an even bigger spin on that? And especially in the way that our programming has become, it's become looking at these texts and saying, this text says something to me now.
Right. So now we'll leap forward to now, just simply because we won't have time to go through all the shows that you've done. But two very different pieces, very contrasting pieces here at Brighton Fringe.
Yes, so we've got opening tomorrow, we've got The Death of Ivan Illich, which is by an original novella by Leo Tolstoy. It's this wonderful tale of a middle-class man who has lived his life perfectly, has done everything he should have done, has the two kids, a nice house, and then he falls over while decorating his new ideal home, and that fall begins to kill him, and he has to have this reassessment of his life. It's a wonderful look of someone who has never thought, never given death a second thought, and then suddenly has to reassess his own humanity and his own sense of life. We've thrown it into modern day. It looks at everything that we are taught that we should aspire to have, and it challenges those conceptions. So we're advertising at the moment, which I think is probably the best way I can describe it, as Fleabag meets Tolstoy.
And also one of the plays that's less commonly done, if not very rare.
I have never seen an adaptation of it. I've only ever seen one in company attempt it while I was researching it to see if there were any scripts out there. A company tried it in Merston in 2016. Other than that, I've not seen anyone else try and do it, which really surprises me because it's not a massive cast, it's one room, and it's very, very, some moments of real intimacy. It's a beautiful text. It's also only 70 pages, so it's totally palatable. So that's show number one. And then show number two is from, it's called Further Education. It's by a writer called Pete Barrett. It's about the 1985 miners' strike. If I've got time, can I quickly talk about how this show's been programmed?
You can. But I also just want to let hang in the air Leo Tolstoy, Pete Barrett. There's something in there, isn't there?
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's what we love about this year is that, you know, and last year we had William Shakespeare and Natalie Audley as our two writers.
And we all know Nat, don't we?
And it's like household name right in there. And that's what's great about the work as well. It's two totally different pieces. So here in Brighton, we run with Roger and Lauren at the Rialto, the Brighton Scratch Night, which is our new writing programme, which we're very, very proud of. It's grown into something really beautiful and massive, where we received scripts last year. We received around 150. Last year I read all of them as well. That was an undertaking. And it was amazing. Scripts from all sorts of subjects, from all sorts of writers, all from the UK. And we put 9 extracts on over 3 nights to audiences. And I must produce one every year in the Fringe. This year it's Pete Barrett's Further Education, which is about the 1985 miners' strike. What's brilliant about this piece, it was written in 1990. The script is older than I am. It sat in a desk drawer after its initial writing, being told it was too close to the event. And now Pete's brought it back out. And it's this wonderful look at a point when without wishing to... And it's not too political, but it is at a point when you had a conservative government, very unpopular, and a large liberal movement challenging that. What this looks at is one miner put into a house with 3 Essex University students, all female. They've got a 45-year-old who's lived his life down in the pit, and he goes and he lives with these 3 young feminist liberal students, and it's this wonderful clash of ideals where people are on the same side but they're also teaching each other so much. It's very funny, it's very moving, and it's got a couple of unsuspecting twists on the way. It's a really lovely piece.
And so coming back to where this interview started about Unmasked and about when you talk about, you know, very ancient plays and, you know, the working with the text and, you know, not, and being able to modernise and being able to find that timeless quality. Both those places you've described them have history to them, even if one is recent. In some ways, it might have been hundreds of years ago, the miners' strike for a new generation. If we go and watch both of those, we take both of those in at Brighton Fringe, would we see flavours, a through line, an approach for Unmasked that we'd see in both if we didn't know in advance?
I'd like to really hope so. So the things that we work on are palatable short scenes, pacey scenes. The text is always so important to us about being dynamic. You don't go and watch theatre to go and watch people sit on stage and tell you how sad they are. So it's dynamic prose. Sound is a big thing for us. I can promise you some banging soundtracks, both with the 80s. Some Kate Bush is definitely going in there. But Ivan has got...
In which one?
Kate... Wait, if I can get my way, both. But no, so Kate Bush will definitely be in the 80s. But for Ivan, we have ABBA, Al Jolson, and some Polish indie music. So what more do you want? That's how I'm selling that.
Right.
So sound is really, really important and sort of really kind of where we kind of workshop from as well.
Yeah.
And probably a bit of live sound as well, a bit of live singing comes in with that. And then moments of real intimacy and vulnerability on stage that are built from the actors. We've got two wonderful casts this year, absolutely fantastic, with loads of local names. In fact, everyone is local this year, which is something that's really great. I'm hoping that that will sort of be... That's sort of what we've grown to try and have a bit of defining branding. Local actors, quality pros... and a wonderful sort of experience of sound.
Final question would be then, in terms of then how Unmasked develops in the future, these are two very different plays. So are you looking to sort of unravel and go in divergent places even more as you develop? Is this a sign that, you know, wherever you started from, those great classics we talked about, Bold, and, you know, kind of looking back, you might have done them differently with more resources, to now where does this go? Because it could just go even more madly in some ways in terms of the choices of the plays that you do.
So both Pip and I are writers ourselves, not just of adaptation, so we have some new writing coming in, and I think we are moved away a little bit from the traditional sense of just modernising the classic text, although the modernisations have got bigger and more bizarre, and I'm hoping that can really continue. Next Fringe, we have some very weird ideas that we're already talking about, although obviously, you know, let's get this one out of the way first. And then with the new writing, again, we're fascinated by stories about real people and real events. So we have, we've become strangely associated with Russian literature after our success with the Writer's Block a couple of years ago. And we will be bringing a new piece about Nadezhda Mandelstam, who was an incredible figure, out in October. So I think, yeah, weird and Russian is probably where we're going next.
Brighten the world, you have been warned. Luke from Unmasked Theatre, thanks for talking to Fringe Review.